This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays. With a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist, it's Natterdays.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back, a College World Series title. Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast.
Baseball's kind of, you know, kind of hitting a little bit of a lull in the news cycle here before we ramp back up for the weekend.
Yep.
We didn't mention much about the SEC meeting starting yesterday, and that kind of became part of the news cycle down in Destin, and because it always starts right after Memorial Day. We got to figure out how to worm our way into this thing.
Okay, you keep saying we got to figure it out. You're the boss.
I got to figure out how to send myself down there on the company dime.
There you go. There you go. Because
that would seem a little excessive to come back from vacation and go to Destin for, air quotes, work.
Well, I mean, you got to do what you got to do for the company, Tommy. I mean, somebody's got to do that job.
But what's this deal going on with Justice Hill? Okay, there's a tweet that comes out yesterday that says he's not going to be a part of the basketball or football team. And then Justice Hill says, excuse me.
Here's a picture of me.
Selfie of me in the practice center working on basketball. Hello.
Oh, you know,
so
just
just
the classic good stuff on the for radio content and give us something to discuss, I reckon. But yeah, that was a weird story yesterday. Because Justice Hill, it's kind of gone quiet because you haven't really heard Eric Musselman talk about Justice Hill in depth. We know that not to say he was controversial being added to the Arkansas team, but a lot of people felt like at the end of Mike Anderson's tenure, it's like, man, this is the one player you're bringing in this year is Justice Hill, and he's not even that highly recruited. It just seemed like it was kind of a weird fit, and then he reclassified to become, he's actually supposed to be a senior in high school this upcoming year, and today he's going to be a freshman in college. So there was just a lot of moving pieces with him, and you haven't heard anything from him. And then yesterday, it's reported that he won't play. Yeah. And he says, hey, I'm right here in the practice facility. Obviously, I will play. But what's great about it is we have Nick Mason, who's been gone from the show. You know, I said, Tommy, you were the prodigal son. I think he may be the prodigal son here of the Morning Rush. But he's going to be in studio with us here in about 20 minutes. And hopefully he can give us some enlightenment on exactly what's been going on with the Justice Hill situation.
They give me these 3 weeks of vacation. What am I supposed to do? Not use them? I mean, come on, man.
Yeah. Apparently he's got a great contract.
Yeah,
he's got a great deal going on.
We all want Nick Mason still. What is going to happen with Justice Hill? Okay, he may be around the basketball team. He may be practicing right now. All that's fine. Maybe the reporting was a little quick-triggered yesterday by Trey Schaap. But that may not have all been on point. Okay, fine. But, you know, things sometimes get lost in translation. I wonder kind of what did Trey hear? What spurned that? He just didn't say, hey, watch this. I'm going to fire off a tweet. And something came up that he heard in conversation somewhere. But I still wonder how much is he going to play for the basketball team. He may be on the team. He may end up being a walk-on, non-scholarship player. I don't know what the situation's going to be, but I just see all these guys coming in as transfers, and we still don't know who is going out. I mean, there can only be so many on scholarship, as we know.
That's right.
And there's only so many playing minutes. They're not going to allow Arkansas to play with six for very long.
Yeah.
So I just wonder how many minutes would he achieve this year anyway. You brought up a point that I wanted to get to is he reclassified. Now, Musselman keeps recruiting and bringing in. It's recruiting. He's recruiting these transfers, these grad transfers and these guys in the transfer portal that are older, more physically developed, just because the difference in the bodies between 18 and 20, 18 and 22, 19 and 23 are just
night and day.
Night and day. So now you got a kid. I assume I'm correct that Justice Hill is 17. I could be wrong about that, but I'm just assuming that based on he reclassified and he should be going into his senior year. Did I have any of that wrong?
Sounds right to me.
Okay. Just the physical development. Now, he is a specimen for a high school athlete. But he's now a college athlete.
Right.
So I'm not saying he can't get the job done. I'm just saying he's going up against some guys that have 2, 3, 4 years on him at a very critical stage of physical development.
And not to mention the fact that Justice Hill is a guard. And what does Arkansas have a ton of right now coming in? They have guards. Now, if he was a big man, I think that there would be no question he'd get playing time. But they have so many guards there.
They do, but let's talk to Nick about, what about point guards, though? You know, doesn't seem like there's a lot of point guards right now.
You got Jalen Harris, who was the point guard last year. He was really good at assist-turnover ratio, but that was it.
All right, yeah.
I'm saying they have one. I don't know. Okay. I don't know what their plan would be after that.
Right. So, yeah, you're right. Got a lot of guards, got some forwards, and there's going to be some guys, I think, that he's going to move out of some of them guard spots and are going to get a chance, whether they like it or not, to play at the forward spot some. I heard him make mention of that at a Razorback Club meeting the other night, that some of these guys that have been guards and like that, they're going to get a taste of some power forward. They may or may not like it, but they're going to do it anyway. So,
yeah, I mean, I could see someone like a Mason Jones kind of moving more to that forward spot.
I think that was one name he exactly mentioned.
Yeah, so you know, I could totally see that happen.
I mean, there's going to be some, but, you know, he wants to have all five guys on the floor be a shooting threat, you know, from a lot of different spots. So it's going to be interesting to see what this whole, the thing I don't get with Justice Hill, and I got to see him up close and personal in a Little Rock Christian game this year in football. I'm going to talk from a football angle. As good a basketball player, you know, no one in here is doubting his basketball ability, but he wasn't like Calipari and Coach K weren't flying in to watch his games.
Right.
All right. So this isn't an elite level. Let's just be honest. Justice Hill was not one of these guys that every school in the country was after. Is that a fair statement?
Fair statement.
I think that's a fair statement. In football, I don't know that I don't think the Nick Sabans and the Kirby Smarts were lining up. But this guy wasn't he the Gatorade Player of the Year?
He was.
Am I remembering that right?
Yep.
Just a dynamic football player. Now, I don't know that Chad Morris could use him as a quarterback, and Arkansas has got more quarterbacks than they're stacked like cordwood up there right now in the quarterback room. They got a big number of quarterbacks. So, but the guy is a tremendous athlete. Now, again, he's a year behind in development physically, but I would think he would have a better opportunity because they could find a place to put him on the field in the slot, wide receiver, somewhere. The guy's physical skills because of his height, I think, could help because he doesn't have, like, overwhelming basketball height. The guy's not 6'6".
No, 5'11", according to here on Rivals. So,
which probably means more like 5'9", 5'10".
Probably so.
Yeah. I would think the guy could be more of a playmaker, more of a difference maker on the football field.
No, I mean, what would you think? Would you think that he would see the field more on football or see the court more in basketball? As far as upcoming year in the next year or two.
How many spots could he play in basketball? He'd play the
guard.
One, the two, and the three, maybe?
Maybe the three,
He ain't a 4 or 5 at under 6 foot.
Right.
And we're probably stretching it to say the 1, 2, or 3.
Mm-hmm.
So how many spots could he play in football? He could play quarterback, but that's probably not likely just because of the situation.
Right.
He could play
wide receiver.
Wide receiver. And how many? So let's count wide receiver twice because how many are out there? So
there's
3 to 5 depending on formation. So let's just say you count that because there's more opportunity to play at wide receiver. He could probably, you could find a way to put him in some kind of, not running back role, but...
like a hybrid type thing between a running back, wide receiver.
I'm just saying from a position and opportunity standpoint, there's probably as much opportunity to find a role for him in football as there is in basketball. Because I think you're stretching to say he could be a 1, 2, or 3 in basketball. I think that's a stretch. You could probably put him at receiver, some kind of hybrid running back. He could play quarterback. I just don't think it's likely because of the numbers and who else is there.
Yeah. I think
the opportunity to play on the football team is probably just as much or maybe more.
Yeah. And you've seen him play. Who knows? Maybe he could be on the defensive side of the ball too. Find some position there to make it in the secondary, maybe a cornerback. I don't know. I don't know. But I do know that he is a freak athlete that he could find a good game to play.
Dude jumped over the guy in the playoff game. I was out there on the field for that, and he is running, and he had just full speed and just smooth clears the guy. I mean, it was one of the most amazing athletic things I've seen up close and personal like that. I mean, just wow.
Yeah.
You know.
And people who have
what just happened there.
And people who have that type of level of athleticism can find a sport that they can play, can find a spot. It's just a matter of, does he want to try to find his spot on basketball, or does he want to try his hand at football? And football, like, not only is the positions there, but and maybe I'm being too harsh, but I feel like the football team needs all the type of athletes like that that they can get. Basketball is going to get athletes no matter what. I mean, Eric Musselman's already bringing in some pretty great athletes, some pretty good players. But football, I mean, they're at the point now where, yeah, they have some true freshmen that have come in that could be pretty good. But, you know, the more athletes they have on the football team, the better.
Yeah. Well, look, I mean, Nick's going to be in here. Why the rush to reclassify? Why the rush to get there? I want to maybe dive into that a little more, but yeah, it'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Man, the bridges are back open. You talk about a difference in 24 hours where we're sitting. The road in front of the studio yesterday morning was like bumper to bumper. There was two or three accidents around noon yesterday in the River Valley. The 540 and Midland Bridge reopened. It's like a life changer for everybody. And but I you know, then there was more rain. I mean, I don't know if you got woke up about 2:30 this morning.
I did.
Severe thunderstorms moving through the area. So hopefully that doesn't lead to it, but they have kind of downgraded the crest of the river. What was once thought to be going to be north of 42 feet, now what, between 41 and a half and 42 is the projection. So that's supposed to happen today. So maybe we're getting to the point where things can start to turn around a little bit as the flooding. But it just continues to get worse and worse further east you go, whether it's Ozark, whether it's Clarksville, Morrilton, just on down the river. You know, that area continues to, you know, we're going to see this for days on end.
So is the crest going to hit today?
That's the projected forecast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then it's going to hold for like 4 days. So then we're into the weekend. It's going to be before, and then the water's got to recede. Well, it's going to recede probably about as slow as it has risen. So I'm thinking some of these roads that closed, and this Garrett Lewis brought this up on the news. They closed the 64 highway in Roland, Oklahoma, that closed the Garrison Bridge, and some of these roads that closed at like 38, 37, 38 feet. Well, how long is it going to take for that water to get back to 36 or 37 feet for that road to open? So you're talking another week or 10 days, and like the Garrison Bridge may be closed another 10 days at least, potentially, depending on just how quickly the water can recede. Because that water's got to have somewhere to go to get off that roadway.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And it's not just like it's ever flowing and it'll just carry away. It'll be for a day.
It's got to have somewhere to go.
Yeah, it's got to have somewhere to go.
Anyway, flooding's still the... It has not went away since we visited yesterday.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, a light lager brewed with a phenomenal strawberry lemonade flavor that's perfect for bringing the fun to every occasion. The new Natural Light Natterdays.
Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Danny is in Russellville. What's going on, Danny?
Good morning, guys. I just saw the clip on Fox from Fort Smith. I believe it was on Highway 22. And that water was up almost to the roofs of some businesses there.
Yeah.
And I also saw a clip of an elderly gentleman, I believe it was yesterday, who drove his truck off into some water, and it was over the hood of his truck. I mean, people, we can't do anything about this water. We have just got to not try to drive through it. You know, it's just, it's going to be there, and if you're in a hurry, leave a little early. Don't risk driving through this water. That's how people get killed.
I've seen some of the video there at the Dardanelle Dam. You're in Russellville.
Oh my God! Right, I went over there yesterday, Tommy.
Yeah, what's that?
It's,
I mean, what's that?
Scary,
because, I mean, everybody, because we're here and it's at our back door, but we've been talking about it everywhere along the river, including Russellville, Dardanelle, that area. It's bad there, and it's going to get worse.
4 million gallons per second surging through that dam. That is the scariest looking thing. I mean, it's just, you can't believe how.
And that's coming out of the lake,
there.
Not through the river. I mean, I know it's river curve, but that's coming through the lake first too.
Yes, it's unbelievable. It's really scary looking. But everybody, just slow down. Don't get in a hurry. Think I can drive through here and get there a little faster? Hey, in a week from now, this water will recede and everything. Everybody will pick up the pieces and go back to normal. And I'm not going to give you a beef today, because I'm just thankful that everything's okay. I mean, for a lot of people, it's not, but I don't want to beef about nothing. Just before I get off here, is Justice Hill coming back or not? I heard a little bit about it.
Well, that's what we've been discussing, actually, this morning, Danny. And it was reported that he will not play football or basketball yesterday, but Justice Hill himself came out, and after that was reported, and took a picture of him inside the Razorback practice facility and basketball practice facility, going through some drills and stuff. So it just looks like he's still with the team and still plans on playing. So I don't know where the report came from, but that's what we have now.
It makes you wonder how things like that
where
get started.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, the Jimmy Witt thing, I remember his 1 year at Arkansas. He was pretty good about being quick and everything, but he was a terrible shooter. I just wonder, we don't need any bad shooters. We had plenty of these the last couple of years anyway. But anyway, guys, thanks for taking my call, and you guys stay safe.
And I appreciate it, Danny. Yeah, stay safe for sure. Yeah, that whole Jimmy Witt thing is something else we discussed yesterday, too. And, you know, it's a weird situation because with Jimmy Witt, I looked at his stats when he was at SMU. He shot as a guard, as a fourth-year guard, shot 56% from the free throw line. Now, at Arkansas in his first year, he shot 80%.
Now, from the floor, that'd be great. But from the free throw line, that's terrible.
Yeah, and now, he shot like 14% from three-point.
Yeah, exactly. That's the number. Now, I haven't questioned anything with Eric Musselman and recruiting, and I mean, everything's been in the honeymoon phase, but this one makes you kind of scratch your head a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, he did average 12 points a game and 6.4 rebounds a game and 4 assists per game. Like, you see that stat line, you're like, okay. But he also shot 49% from the field last year. 14% from three-point line, 56% from the free throw line, but 49% from the field.
That's good.
So, now, I'm not going to sit here and try to admit that I've watched game film and tape on Jimmy Witt in his time over at SMU, but maybe Musselman sees it as, hey, I don't need you to be a shooter. I got some shooters. I need you to do something else. I need you to be the assist guy. I need you to be more, I don't know, maybe they're wanting to mold him into something. But, yeah, that was the first thing, because I kind of felt that way about the Connor Vanover deal, even when they added him. I was kind of like, okay. He's 7'3", which is always good in basketball if you have a guy that's over 7 feet tall, especially somebody like that, and then he can shoot threes fairly well. Okay, that's fine. But it still kind of made you wonder, all right, but what else is he going to do? What are they going to work on? But he has to sit out a year, too. But, you know,
well,
it's definitely
they haven't ruled on that waiver, though, yet.
No, they haven't ruled on the waiver yet, so right. He could win that. But as of right now, he'll be sitting out.
You would count on him. Yeah, I mean, if you had to bank on it one way or the other, you would say he's not going to play,
right.
But there is a chance. There's a chance he could play.
Exactly. And I'm going to be honest too, folks, like, this is a whole new thing for at least me. And I know it is for you, Tommy, of seeing a coach like this and dealing with Arkansas basketball, because you've had Mike Anderson for 8 years and Pelfrey before that and Heath before that. I mean, look at all the transfers you've had and there hadn't even been a game played. There hadn't been a shot taken.
And that will be interesting as the meetings continue to happen in Destin. We're talking about SEC meetings that are, occurring right now in a rough spot in Destin, Florida, at the Sandestin Golf Village down there. This transfer portal is going to be a conversation because it's affecting multiple sports, and it's really changing the way recruiting is. There's going to have to be recruiting rule changes at some point. I will find it interesting to see what the conversation kind of gravitates towards with the transfer portal. And what stances, if any, the SEC takes as far as, here's some changes we'd like to see with how these particular players are recruited and how players enter and exit the transfer portal. Because clearly basketball amongst all the sports has a real problem with players transferring. And you know, that's really the problem they got to get down to, is why are so many players so dissatisfied? This isn't all graduate transfers that they've earned their degree and they're using that. I hate to call it a loophole, because if you've earned your degree, that's the whole reason you're supposed to be there. You should have the right to go do that and play somewhere else immediately, be eligible. But why are so many of these other players that aren't graduates so dissatisfied? And now you're looking at your second school, perhaps in some cases your third school in 3 or 4 years. The sport has an issue that needs to be corrected.
So how do you correct it?
Huh?
But that's the thing, is how do you correct something?
You got to identify it before you can correct it. I don't know what the issue is. You got to figure out why all these players, what is it, 800 players or so a year are transferring right now?
Yeah, it's getting...
The sport has a problem.
Yeah.
Now, I'm sure the blame's going to be quickly pointed to, well, these players are dissatisfied, unrealistic expectations, and blah, blah, blah. Well, maybe it goes back to you shouldn't be setting expectations for some of these players so high in the living room when you're recruiting them.
Yeah.
And that's hard for coaches to do when you're trying to get a player to come play for you and you're telling them, hey, you're good, but you're not that good.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a real good recruiting message. I get it. So some of these guys, clearly their situation's not meeting their expectations, so they're looking for greener pastures elsewhere. Sometimes I saw this, someone put this on Twitter. Sometimes those pastures are greener because they're covered in manure.
I'm going to have to remember that one. That's a good one. But I get what you're saying.
I mean, the sport has a problem.
It does.
You agree?
I know. I agree it has a problem. And every situation's different with these players. My thing is, and if I'm just taking a stab at it of what I think the problem is, and it, you can say this in many different sports, but basketball, it's obviously the biggest issue, is that a lot of these players, if not most of them, throughout their entire basketball playing career, has been the guy. They've been the starter. They've been the star.
If you're good enough to play at this level,
yeah.
You've been the best junior high player. Yep. You've been the best, absolutely.
High school player. And you've always been the best. You've always been the go-to guy. And you always got the most minutes. Everything revolved around you. And when you get to college basketball, it's not that way anymore in a lot of cases. Now, if you're Zion Williamson, okay. But a lot of these kids who aren't that good.
One in a 100,000 kind of player.
And if you are one of these kids that are not to that elite level where it's like, hey, you need some work on your game. Hey, you need to develop some of this. You're not the best player on this team. You're good, but you're not the best. That's a hard pill to swallow for a lot of these kids, and that's a hard change in their style of play. And so they transfer and they go to a place where they can get that, where they can become that guy, where they can be having the offense run through them and be the main guy. So I feel like, that's not in all cases because I know every situation's different. But by and large, when I see that transfer portal open up and then just players are piling in like it's just insanity, I feel like that is the most obvious reason behind it. It's just something like that, where they want to go someplace where they can be the guy. They can be the man. And if people may see that as selfish, and that's fine, but I also can kind of see it from the perspective of the player, where it's like, you know, if you were told this your whole life, if you were playing this way your whole life, it's a difficult thing to change. It's a difficult thing to, you know, kind of swallow your pride a little bit and say, hey, I know you were averaging 30 plus minutes a game in high school and you were getting 25 points a game and all these shots, but this year you may get 10 minutes a game, 12 minutes a game. You may only get to shoot 4 or 5 times a game. And that's just something they don't like dealing with, and they can't deal with.
I think it's, and again, Nick will be in here in a little while, and we can see, are these guys coming into their college careers with expectations that are so out of line with their ability to perform that when a year or two seasons are up and they're nowhere near where they thought they would be because this is what the coach said. This is what dad said. This is what the AAU coach said. This is what the influencers around you said through the recruiting process. You are going to be at this point after 1 year, and then you're nowhere near that. Well, the solution becomes automatically find a different boat to start rowing in.
Yep.
I think that's got to be part of what's going on with basketball. It's probably not all of it.
It's a big part of it.
But everybody's wanting to jump ship and get in a different boat and start rowing someone else's oars, and that just doesn't always work. And we've seen, I know Tubby Smith had some quotes on this, Bob Huggins. We've seen all these things on social media about, you know, some of these old school coaches. You know, the guys aren't sticking it out. They're not learning to tough it out. We're not teaching them life is tough. Sometimes things in life are going to happen that are tough. And you're not preparing them for those situations either. But also understand the other side. You got 4 years to play college basketball. You got 5 years to play four. And you can't squander that opportunity either. So, I mean, when you got close to 1,000, over 800 transfers a year in one sport, that's a problem.
Yep, absolutely. And in fact, you know how there's people like Richard and all that that do recruiting 24/7 because recruiting's always going on? There's eventually going to be somebody who just covers the transfer portal. Because it's constantly. Yeah. It's not just one time of the year it happens.
It's all changed the time. Recruiting. Yeah. I mean, it's changed the way coaches, particularly in basketball, are looking at recruiting.
And if you want an example, look at Eric Musselman up at Arkansas.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer, with a refreshing strawberry lemonade twist. Natterdays, fun for every occasion.
They won't catch him. Alex Collins is going to take it all the way to the house.
Is Justice Hill going to play basketball this year for the Razorbacks?
Yes, I hadn't heard anything about him not playing basketball at Arkansas until yesterday, whenever that buzz tweet came out. Okay. What I think happened, and I don't know because I've reached out to a few people over there, and maybe they don't have my number saved because nobody has responded back to me.
That's what.
But
it is.
What I think happened was, I don't think everybody knew that Justice Hill may not be on a basketball scholarship at the start of the fall semester. I don't think everybody knew that. So I think Trey may have heard Musselman saying, hey, these are our scholarship guys, and maybe he left out Justice, and Trey may have asked, and he said, no, Justice not on scholarship. At that point, because Fitz Hill, which is Justice's dad, and Justice had already come out and say he's not playing football. He's only going to focus on basketball. He's not playing football. So at that point, I just think that those guys he's not on a basketball scholarship, he's not playing football, and therefore they said he will not play basketball or football at the University of Arkansas. And which I know that a lot of people are giving Trey a hard time about, he gets a lot of things wrong. He's not just going to come out on Twitter and just make something like that up.
Yeah.
That just doesn't happen. Now,
that's your job.
Right, exactly. They're going to be one of us. But touche. That was funny. But he's not just going to wake up one day and say, "You know what? I don't think Justice is playing basketball or football because I haven't heard a lot about it. Let me just put it out." Right. As much as people want to say that's what he did, that is not how things happen. And so I hadn't heard that he wasn't going to play basketball until then. Like I said, the only thing that I had heard was he wouldn't be on a scholarship. And I'm sure we'll get into this scholarship stuff because guys, I'm telling you, Arkansas's not done. They're going to try to sign another guy or two, three. Okay. Three would be pushing it just a little bit. And we could jump into the numbers, but they're not done.
Yeah. Let's do it like high dive. Like Greg Louganis, we're going to do a triple gainer into the numbers here. So,
So
Khalil Garland.
Right now, hold on. Well, hold on.
Let's get to how we get there.
Let's count him. I want to count.
There's like 18 guys on this team right now.
Right. I want to count everybody that is on the hill, counting the five transfers. So if you have the five guys that are transferring in, plus if you have, and I know there's going to be a lot of people that roll their eyes, but I want to be clear because a lot of people don't know that Holmes is not on a scholarship anymore. A lot of people don't realize that Johnny Holmes will not have a scholarship. So if you count Johnny Holmes, Justice Hill, the five transfers that are coming in, Jimmy Witt and all those other guys or whatever, plus everybody that's on campus, then that right there puts you at 17, I believe. Now,
and they're still recruiting.
Right. And you can only carry 13. But now,
13 in scholarship.
Right. In saying that, though, Holmes is not going to be on a scholarship.
No.
I don't think that Justice Hill is on a scholarship. I could be wrong. They may come out in the fall and tell me that I'm wrong. I don't know if they're ever going to come out and say, oh, he's not on a scholarship. I think that we'll just be able to see, okay, well, you got, 13 transfers in here or whatever they're not walking on. So you'll be able to see. So Holmes is not on a scholarship. Justice Hill, I don't think he'll be on a scholarship. And I think they're going, to me, Khalil Garland is either going to play for the Razorbacks this year or he's not going to count against their scholarships. But if Correct. He counts against the scholarships this year, then I definitely think that he'll be out there playing. Now, I'm not breaking news and saying that he's going to play. I don't think he'll play. But if he counts against the scholarship or the Razorbacks this upcoming year, it'll be because he's on the court. They're not going to allow him.
Garland?
Yes.
I've been told by people that I believe know that that situation, I think, is going to come to some finality here quickly, and that he'll continue with an academic scholarship
right.
provided by the university
right.
and maybe have some kind of support role around yes. the team if he wants that,
yes.
but he will not be on basketball scholarship because the medical issue is going to keep him from playing. That is what I have been told is the situation, and it doesn't look like the medical part of it is changing so that they need to get that scholarship back. His schooling will continue. He'll have a role around the team. It just won't be as a basketball player, a scholarship player.
And I was told a year and a half ago he would never dress out at the University of Arkansas. But it's not, I mean, Mike didn't have anybody else. It's not like Mike had somebody out there that he could have brought in, and it's okay, we need to take your scholarship. So I think it dragged on, and I think it prolonged the final decision that we're at right now, because it's not like Mike had another guy. But yeah, so those are the numbers. And
so who else is leaving? So you got to make it work somehow,
right?
So how get us to 13?
I think, okay, so I may have misspoke. Holmes, Khalil, and Justice, that puts you to 16.
Okay.
And so now.
So we got three.
If those three are off, then that puts you back to 13.
Okay.
But they will sign another guy or two. I just don't see, I mean, because look, these guys are visiting. I mean, Jimmy Witt, this is how this played out. Jimmy Witt announced, I'm transferring from SMU. This was. And don't hold me to the days, but let's say this is Wednesday at noon. By Wednesday at supper, Jimmy Witt's coming to Arkansas. I mean, like, this stuff is happening so fast.
Yeah.
And Musselman is getting, I mean, he's almost getting anybody that he's setting his sights on as far as transfer. I mean, like, we see a huge list that comes out. Hey, these are the guys that are transferring. Well, all of them are coming to Arkansas. So everything is telling me that these next couple of weekends, he's supposed to be bringing in, you know, a couple of more quality guys. The chances of them committing, I think, are very high.
Musselman must have a guy, somebody. Their only job is you sit there and hit refresh at a computer and look at the transfer portal like every 5 minutes. It must be somebody's
if
job
you, well,
to see what's going on with, because it's changing so fast.
If you look at the
I'm
guys.
I'm exaggerating about the 5 minute
right.
part, but somebody's got to be responsible for that. Four or five times a day,
yeah.
combing through that, looking at any changes or updates, who's come in, who's gone out, who's decided on a school. This thing is an amoeba. It's just moving all the time.
Well, and if you look at what he did with his staff, other than the last hire, the guy from the Lakers, of course he wasn't recruiting.
Mosier.
But if you look at his staff, some of these guys were already plugged in with some of these transfers at their other stops. And also too, Musselman and his staff, they are very plugged in on the AAU circuit. I've been to a bunch of different games this summer. Wait till y'all see some of the other kids that he has coming in here on visits from teams in out of New York, California, Florida, just in areas that Arkansas just has never offered guys in, and Arkansas just has never been able to pick up a New York guy. Unless the guy's parents, you know, were here during the Nolan era and they grew up here, that's been the only chance that Arkansas's really had of grabbing a lot of these kids. Whereas now, Musselman and this staff is very plugged in on the AAU circuit and obviously very plugged in on the transfer circuit.
All right, we got about 2 minutes here before we got to get out of here. We saw a stark difference when Chad Morris came in the difference in recruiting between what Chad Morris is doing and his staff is currently doing and what Bielema had been doing. Give us some kind of comparison. Tell us the difference in the staff. Compare what's going on now with recruiting, because you said you've been watching it throughout the summer. What's Arkansas staff doing now that it was or wasn't doing before under Anderson? Give us the differences, the comparisons in the recruiting styles between Anderson's staff and what Arkansas is seeing now with Musselman.
I don't think that Coach Anderson was as comfortable with getting 1 year rentals as basketball players in the transfer game like Musselman is. I think that it's obvious that he's very comfortable in that area. And when you're a head coach and like he's been, and you've relied on transfers, you know what happens whenever a kid wants to transfer? The first thing that he or his AAU coach or handler or uncle, whatever, the first thing that they do is look at, okay, what are programs that normally take transfers? Well, Musselman has to be right there at the top. And as far as on the AAU circuit, they're just offering a bunch of guys, and it doesn't matter if you're a 4 or 5 star from New York, Texas, California. It doesn't matter. That doesn't scare them off the way that it scared off the previous staff. And I mean, it just seemed like every game there was a top 10 player in the country, either in the 20 class or 21 class, and he had an Arkansas offer. And so I think that's the biggest difference is like they're not afraid to go after the big fish, and I think he's going to land a couple of 4 or 5 stars that's just going to make us go, wow, how did he get these guys, similar to the Chad Moores?
Well, it's certainly a situation that we've been discussing, and it's dealing with the transfers as well, because this is something that's new to a lot of Razorback fans where they haven't seen the transfer portal, first of all, open, but then open up to them in a way that they
you may get one. And, yeah. And, you know, we can go back and say Dusty Hannes or Landis Harris and
it's happened
Keaton
before.
Miles. You may get one. But you don't get 5.
Yeah, all before even a play has been made.
And they're not done. They're going to sign another guy to possibly 3.
Yeah.
But isn't this kind of what Chad Morris has also done in football to a degree, where he's overhauled the roster by bringing in guys from the outside? Obviously, the high school recruiting has been a big factor, but using graduate transfers. I mean, we don't talk about portal as much in football, but it's there.
Yeah.
But the percentages are higher in basketball. What we're seeing to just – change the culture, change the roster, you know, change where you're at right now with your program by changing the players. Yep. I mean, that's the only way to do it.
Yep.
Improve the roster.
And if you can do it through the transfer portal, so be it. Whatever gets your team better the fastest.
At the bottom of all this, it's about a culture change.
Yeah.
Because that's the reason you got rid of your coach. You got to have a culture change within your program. Well, one way to do that is start changing the roster up pretty quick.
You're listening to the Bud Light Morning Rush Podcast, brought to you by the all-new Natural Light Natterdays, the new beer of the summer.
A lot of stuff coming from the SEC meetings, and one of the deals that Greg Sankey was asked about, the commissioner of the SEC, and it's not just an SEC issue, it's really a college athletics issue, is about this transfer portal and the amount of transfers that are happening in college sports, and especially in college basketball, because every single year it seems the transfers have been growing and growing and growing. You're close to 1,000 players that have entered a name into the transfer portal or that are looking to transfer. And this is something that we discussed this morning, Nick, before you came in, me and Tommy did, was about the issue of the transfer portal, or what is the issue? Should it be fixed? If it needs to be fixed, how can it be fixed? This is a thing that we're really, I don't know if many people know what to do with it, because you see both sides of the argument. And when you have both sides of the argument make sense, it's hard to come to a conclusion or a compromise to make it fixed or to make it better.
There's one thing I don't like. For the people out there that are for or against, you know, the kids transferring out, or with the kids being for it. Okay, so now you do know if we start paying the players, you are under contract. Then at that point, if you're under contract, you can't just leave. And so my first problem with it is those people out there that are like, oh, well, we need to pay these guys and all. Well, they should be able to just get up and leave anywhere. No, no, no. If we start paying people, you can't just up and leave. I mean, Jordan Phillips left before the semester was up.
Yeah.
Like, I cannot, like, I'm not going to pay you, and then you think you're just going to break your contract, and then nothing's going to happen after that. But back to your original question, I don't have a problem with it. I really don't. If you go somewhere and you don't like it, then leave. I mean, I don't know how it's hurting the college basketball game. And because people have to remember, fans aren't fans of players; they're fans of schools. This isn't professional. Like in the NFL or the NBA, you kind of fall in love more with players, like people like LeBron. So when LeBron went from Cleveland to the Lakers picked up a bunch of more fans. People like Kobe Bryant, people like Steph, Clay, all those things. And in college, people aren't spending money because Daniel Gafford is just so amazing and he was doing all these different – no, people were still coming to games last year to support the University of Arkansas, not Daniel Gafford or not Ty Story or not Cole Kelly. You can go on down the list. So I don't think it hurts college basketball at all. And I think that if a kid gets to a certain place – now, I do think there should be some type of maybe – counseling session that you should have to go to where there could be some type of mediation, that like the school has a person on staff that whenever a kid is about to transfer, it is up to that person to go and sit in front of the head coach and be a mediator and be unbiased. Because a lot of times what ends up happening is, so like if you and I are brothers, or if I'm your handler, John, and you go to Arkansas to play quarterback, or you go to Arkansas to play point guard, and if you don't play the exact amount of minutes that I expect you to play, then I'm over here telling you, oh man, you know, Mike Anderson's a bad coach. He doesn't want you to succeed. You need to get out of here. So you're just getting it all from one side. So I do think there should be some type of mandatory maybe counselor, in which that's probably not going to help, but I don't have a problem with as many kids leaving as want to.
Okay, there's what, 330-ish Division I schools in college basketball?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's about 1,000 transfers a year.
Okay, so 330 times 13 is 4,290. So you're talking about basically one in four, less than 25% of college basketball players. And let's be honest, some of these lower level, lower mid-major type teams, they're not having, these aren't the players in general that are moving and leaving. So if you really broke this down to Power Five, the number of in percentages of players leaving is alarming. The sport has a problem. And we touched on this last hour, and I think the problem is, players are given or set with unrealistic expectations before they arrive, and then when they can't attain, as you said, those kind of minutes, score that average number of points, when they see their NBA dream going down the drain because they're only playing 12 minutes a game or 8 minutes a game, now let's take the easy way out and hit the transfer portal. And the sport has an issue. Now, I don't know what the issue is, but everybody's looking for the greener pasture. Now, why is that? I think a lot of it is because they come in with expectations that can't be met. And who are setting those expectations? Is it the coach recruiting them? Is it their high school coach? Is it their parents or the adults around them? All of the above. Yeah. For some reason, people don't leave and get upset and want to change situations if their expectations are met. When do we all get upset in life? When we didn't get what we expected. So the big problem or the root of it, I don't know that this isn't the cause, but this is the effect, is expectations aren't being met. That's why people are leaving. That's pretty simple. So is it a simple thing, Nick, of a lot of these kids come in with expectations that cannot be met, that are unrealistic, because they're only going to allow 5 players to play at one time. There's only going to be 40 minutes in the game, and there's only going to be so much of the basketball to share. And when these guys don't get, you know, they're used to, John was bringing this up last hour, and it's a good point that we all know that, hey, they've always been the star from junior high to high school. Even though they may be the 13th guy on that roster, they've always been the best player where they've come from till they got here.
Yeah.
And now they're not meeting the expectations they thought they had for themselves. And the sport as a whole has a problem that needs to be fixed.
Well, and one thing that I wanted to kind of hop onto with what Nick was saying, because it does make sense, that if you're just a fan of the sport, a fan of college basketball, and you're a fan of your team, at the end of the day, it doesn't necessarily matter who's wearing that jersey as long as your team is doing well and being successful.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, if from a fan perspective, if you love college basketball and you love a particular team, not necessarily players, but a particular team, what issue do you really take? I mean, what problem is it really for you as a fan? Does it take away anything from your enjoyment of the college basketball game, of the NCAA tournament, of the team you root for, if the transfer portal is the way it is?
I think it's hard. I think stability is always key. Unless you're a Duke or a Kentucky or a Kansas, you know, unless you're a blue blood, it is always difficult to make anything in life go without stability. And when you're overhauling 4 or 5 spots on a 13-man scholarship roster, on average, I mean, that's what the numbers say, it's about 4 out of 13 players a year. That's hard for any program to have stability. I mean, just is. And I think if I'm looking at my program, I want to have as much stability as I can, because it's not just the players graduating and moving on. Now you're replacing freshmen and sophomores that didn't pan out, and you can't have, I think, 50% of your roster, 40 or 50% of your roster look different every year and advance as a program consistently.
The setup of the sport is set up to be like this, though. Because let's just think about this. I saw a report come out that Damian Lillard is going to sign for $192 million. Mm. He just got swept. And Damian Lillard also came from a non-Power 5 school. And this is where I'm going with this. There's so much money in basketball right now. And then and the commissioner is about to start allowing high school kids to come straight from high school to the NBA. Kids are now choosing. There was a kid yesterday, top 10 recruit. It was down to Kansas, Memphis, and Duke. He decided to go to Australia and play. Yep. There's just so much money on the table. So now the sport is set up for failure if you think transfers are failure, because you have 13 guys on a team where normally a basketball team has a rotation of what? You say eight?
Usually.
Maybe. If nobody gets hurt, 7 to 8. And like that.
Nine max.
Nine. But that eighth and ninth person, you're just giving, you know, the top two or three guys a breather.
8 or 10 minutes a game, maybe.
So you have 13 scholarships in a sport that you are going to play eight guys night in and night out. And how many guys did you say are transferring a year? Three or four?
There's 800. I'm just going, there's 330 schools with 13 right. scholarship players. That's 40, almost 4,300 Division I players. And we're talking about between 800 and 1,000 a year. So we're talking about one out of four players, roughly, are transferring. So when you say one out of four on a basketball team, we're talking three players a year as an average in college basketball,
and how many
roughly.
And how many people on average are not part of the rotation? 3 to 4.
Yeah. Well, that's why I say the sport has an issue. Does it go back to expectations?
Well, so,
that all of the, I mean, all 13 of these guys come in expecting to play 43 minutes a game. You know, and there's only 40.
Yes and no. And then it comes down to on every team, and I don't want to pick on this guy because I thought he was good for the Razorbacks. On every team, you have a Manny Watkins. You have a guy that has a story that's either the coach's son or is either from Fayetteville High School or he's a local. And then you have – and he's an older guy, and he's probably better than some of the younger guys you're bringing in. But then you have Jimmy Witt on the sideline or Nick Babb on the sideline, and Nick Babb is looking like, how is Manny Watkins playing more minutes than me? Or and I can't remember if Kiko was around when those guys were around, but it's like, how is Kiko playing – more minutes than me now? And not to pick on those guys, because in those particular times, because I was at practice, I was playing pickup with the guys, Kiko and Manny were better than Jimmy Witt and Nick Babb. But what happens is these kids are coming in and they look at those guys and they're like, oh my goodness, I'm better than this guy. And so a lot of it isn't even expectations. It's just like they come in and the coaching is a lot different, and from high school to college, you're not in your comfort zone. Like John said earlier, you're not the best person on the team anymore. So I think a lot of it is set up, though. You're giving out 13 scholarships a year, and you're only playing eight guys a year. Now, does that mean that you need to cut the scholarships down? No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying the sport is set up for transfers right now. And not only that, but if you're not one of about 15 coaches, you are on a 2 to 3 year leash. And if you go defeated, just like the Vanderbilt coach did, they'll get you out of here, I mean, ASAP. So a lot of the leashes that these coaches are on are so short. So a lot of this stuff has to do with coach gets fired. Then the coach that recruited you to Cincinnati, he ends up going to Louisville. And so now you're like, you're a sophomore. You get a new coach in who never sent you a letter. You don't fit his style. He never wanted you to play there. And so there are a bunch of different reasons, but I just don't think it messes up college athletics, because college fans are fans of teams, not right. players.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Like the Bud Light Morning Rush podcast? Check out the Halftime Pod at hitthatline.com.